we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. This is Dr. Stuart Tankersley and Jordan Vaughn, and today we're going to be discussing more new news about the deadliness of the spike protein that the body produces after receiving the vaccine, as they call it. We'll use that term even though it doesn't qualify. But the evidence is more firmly in that the vaccines, the spike protein, does more injury that is undifferentiated from that of the viral spike protein. But unfortunately, the vaccine produces much more of it than the virus does. Jordan, with that, you want to share with us the very interesting paper that came out last week?
Yeah, so this is from the Journal of the American Cardiology Association, or basically clinical cardiology. And it actually, for once, is starting to elaborate a little more into comparing the damage that is done by COVID versus what is done by the vaccine. And there's some pretty interesting findings here. The interesting thing is it's the first kind of head-to-head. Instead of just assuming that this happens or have people question whether it also happens in COVID, what they did was take seven people that had myocardial or heart injury from the virus, and they took six people that had heart injury from the mRNA vaccine. I will say they had seven, but one of the seven actually ended up going into such terrible heart failure that she was unable to actually get the endomyocardial biopsy. So basically, they are taking tissue out of the heart of somebody that is still living, and then they are going to look at it not only for its gene expression, so what kind of genes does it express, but they also are going to look at it under the microscope at what kind of damage is wrought. So interestingly enough, the first thing it was, the conclusion of the paper actually says COVID-19 and post-mRNA vaccine myocardial injury may have a common molecular pathology. Now, Stuart, what do you think that molecular pathology is?
It's the S1 and S2 and receptor binding domains of the created spike protein.
Exactly. So thank goodness that University of Colorado, as well as Vanderbilt, are finally recognizing what we've been saying for, I don't know, since the spike protein came on the scene. But interestingly enough, the one thing that I found interesting was they looked at the histopathology, which is a fancy word for saying looking under the microscope, but the histopathology in COVID-19 myocardial injury basically said three of the seven patients had underlying coronary artery disease. Again, these are people that actually had COVID, and one had distal posterior descending artery dissection that was clinically incidental and possibly related to the vascular effects of COVID-19. It says, despite clinical findings of myocardial injury, histopathology revealed myocarditis in only one patient. Nonspecific changes no abnormalities in a couple of the other ones. So no COVID-19 patient had SARS-CoV-2 detectable in cardiac myocytes or RNA and detectable by PCR. So this basically means that the people that had COVID-19 that they selected of the seven people had coronary artery disease. And not only that, they only had one of those seven that had myocarditis. Interestingly enough, none of them had detectable SARS-CoV-2. So if you compare it to the pathology or histopathology, looking at it under the microscope of the post-vaccine or post-mRNA vaccine myocardial injury, it says despite this, the MRI findings consistent with myocarditis, on the biopsy, no post-vaccine patient had evidence of myocardial inflammatory infiltrate, which to me is a very fascinating finding. It's not surprising given that we've been missing it in the lungs for quite a while and just assuming that this diffuse alveolar damage is in the airway, not in the vessels. But in the same way, it might be that these things that we're calling myocarditis actually aren't. And so that was one of the interesting findings. So what they did notice was that the three other biopsy cases had nonspecific changes on electron microscopy, possibly related to previous myocardial insult, maybe. But the most interesting thing was that all of these revealed punctate areas of late gadolinium enhancement, initially interpreted as compatible with myocarditis, but also potentially related to small infarcts. Although previous histopathological reports based on endomyocardial biopsy in mRNA vaccine-associated myocardial injury have demonstrated inflammatory infiltrates, there have also been reported cases with no histopathological evidence of inflammation. In summary, it appears that findings in myocardial injury associated with the mRNA can be due to causes other than myocarditis. Alternatively, recovery from inflammation or regardless, to put it all this, you know, what they're basically saying is maybe that the mRNA that we are using and what we're finding on the, you know, myocardial scan with the MRI is really possibly very, very small infarcts everywhere all over the heart, not myocarditis, which I think is a fascinating finding. What do you think about that, Stuart?
Exactly. What he's saying is the lack of blood supply, once again, is a vascular issue going on. And so it's the inflammation obviously is caused. So it can be both, right? It can be the infarcts can cause inflammation. The inflammation can cause the infarcts. But really what you're describing is more of the happening in very small blood vessels that are being blocked off because of the irritation caused by these spike proteins. When they're kind of like raking the inside, they're inserting to and tearing up the inside of the small arteries. And as a result of that, you get poor blood flow to the tissue past that. And obviously you're going to get inflammation because of the markers that were proven. I think it was over a year ago in the Circulation article that showed that you have those five or six markers of inflammation that are increased. So you're getting both, but it goes what I think the importance of the paper that you found that is very worthwhile any scientist looking at is that you're getting the vascular damage. Would that be a good way of summing it up, even though it was long-winded?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the two other things. One, we'll talk about the gene expression, but the other thing, obviously, the conclusion of the article says, however, further studies are required to define the full extent of molecular pathology of COVID-19 and mRNA vaccine-associated myocardial injury, including the extent that and how these are triggered by exposure to S protein, which is, again, goes back to what we've been saying for a while.
Yes. And it just adds on top of what Dr. Paul Merrick said in his Epoch Times interview last week or the week before, and that is that the spike protein is one of the worst toxins to the human body that we've ever run across. And there's just no getting around that fact. That is, we're saying that with certitude. The fact is, they have ignored the reality, the dangers implicit in causing our bodies to produce a known toxin. That is the spike protein we've given with these vaccines. We've given them, our bodies, the instructions to force it to make a known toxin. That's the insanity. That is what a lot of this insanity revolves around, that undeniable fact, as this paper shows. And it's unconscionable that any doctor has not researched 3 years now into this, 2 years into this, and not realized what is going on.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that this, in terms of gene expression, what they say is, when you talk about the gene expression, despite a lack of consistent histopathological findings. So here's the interesting thing. What I would point out is the COVID-19 myocardial injury seemed to be people that already had underlying coronary disease. Not to say that, you know, I'm just saying that it's a small subset of patients. The people that had the mRNA damage on histopathology didn't have underlying coronary disease. Apparently, even though their MRI showed showed myocarditis. They didn't find evidence of myocarditis. And of note, it appears that the endomyocardial biopsy actually kind of suggests really small, teeny heart attacks kind of everywhere. But despite a lack of that consistent findings between the two, findings associated with myocardial injury, you know, that there was, they weren't consistent. The COVID-19 patient and the post-mRNA vaccine patients were uniform in revealing a pattern that was markedly different from control myocardium on gene expression. And that actually has to do with the ACE2 inhibitor. So there was a downregulation of ACE2, was a striking gene expression finding in COVID-19 and post-vaccination patients. This change was the major contributor to a markedly reduced ACE2 to ACE ratio compared with either explanted heart. Anyway, so basically, again, it seems like the gene expression that is produced is consistent, even though the histopathological underlying issues are the same. Interestingly enough, again, I would argue that the people that had myocardial injury from the disease itself seem to have already had underlying coronary disease. The people that were in the vaccine injury group didn't, which is an interesting finding.
Yeah, it is the point of what Jordan is describing. Really, the crux of this is not surprising to us. Why it took 2 years for the highly esteemed Vanderbilt or any academic center to come to this understanding is bewildering. This should have been expected had they appreciated the fact that the spike protein is a toxin. This kind of thing should have been expected, and they should have been looking for this before this was ever unleashed on the public. That's really the underlying thing. It's just a very important proof of what we have expected for 2 years now.
So here's the beautiful conclusion that they have in terms of what we should do with this knowledge going forward. COVID-19 infection and mRNA vaccines can be associated with myocardial injury that is usually diagnosed clinically as myocarditis. In model systems, SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, the mechanism through which the virus enters host cells by binding to the essential cardiac enzyme ACE2, as well as being the immunogen produced by mRNA vaccines, can produce cell damage and unfavorable changes in gene expression. Whew. These observations suggest that myocardial injury during COVID-19 or after mRNA vaccination may be produced by the same spike protein-based mechanisms, which may be amenable to preventive or therapeutic strategies. So kind of sounds like what we've been saying for a year.
Two, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I would say 2 years, because 2 years was when the vaccine was just approved this month. And so it took them a couple of months to get it out on the shelves or get out to the public. But in October, wasn't it? October of 20 that they approved it. And so, or the studies maybe ended. But they approved it. And it was a 2-month study. And by the way,
I will make the point that if you look at the study population here, the average age of the COVID myocardial injury is 53. The average age of the vaccine-induced injury is 36.
Yeah, that's a very important distinction. That's a tremendously important point. And so we're going to take a step back from why 2 years ago they approved this vaccine. We're going to review what happened 2 years ago. And so we've laid the groundwork that the spike protein, which Dr. Yeadon, he was the first one that I ever heard of saying, and he said this well over 2 years ago, you can't use a spike protein as a platform because he had discovered, his lab at Pfizer had discovered over 10 years ago that it is a known toxin. And so what did they do? They went ahead, they pushed through with this vaccine development, and 2 years ago, their study proved that it was effective. Jordan, do you remember what they proved it was effective for?
It certainly had nothing to do with death or preventing people in the hospital, because those two things were not part of endpoints. The endpoint was prevention of infection.
And what have we learned since then?
Well, now evidently they changed the game on us, because that's what they're using as observational data to prove that you should still take the vaccine.
Yeah, because you can still get infected, as that legal case up in New York City said, you can still get infected, and you can also get transmit it to others. So now they're hanging, they only have one thing to hang their hat on, and that is they're claiming that it reduces death and hospitalization. Still, they're claiming that despite the data showing that they do not.
The problem is you can't claim that after the fact. The purpose of trials is to at least have primary endpoints, and primary endpoints meaning what you're actually looking for. The funny thing is those other things, death and hospitalization, weren't even secondary endpoints, and they weren't secondary endpoints because the data did not reveal actually that it did that. I mean, when you actually look at the all-cause mortality in the trial, the all-cause mortality in the trial was higher in the vaccinated arm, not the placebo arm. So that's why that wasn't a secondary endpoint, because they couldn't prove it. So regardless, we will be back after the break. This again is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
How the spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
For concerned doctors, Dr. Jordan Vaughn and I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley on America Out Loud Pulse. Thank you once again for joining us, and please share the podcast with others. We need to get the word out any way possible, because a lot of injury and deaths are occurring, despite the assertions of those in charge that this is the greatest invention since the moon landing. I mean, that is what I've heard said by many people on the other side of this issue, that this is the greatest achievement of America since the moon landing. And it is a catastrophic failure. It's just so undeniable, the reality of this. and they're just unwilling to accept the facts. And so what we're doing today initially, as you know, we just shared with you more concrete evidence of the dangers of the spike protein. And we're going back and using their own metrics. That's all we have to do. Their own study to show that when they got approval of the vaccine, and once again, we're using that term, even though we know that it doesn't qualify as one. But the vaccine that was proven 2 years ago this month, we're looking at their studies, 2 months, that's right, only 2 months of studies. And then, interestingly, part of the horrible deception that they did with these studies, Jordan, as you well know, is that they didn't adulterated it. They corrupted it by giving everybody in the control arm, the placebo control arm, they gave them the injection. So they now had no controls. And very, very unusual and really should be criminal because of the damage is done. But Jordan, if you want to
just use their words once again. Let's read Pfizer's own data about our landmark trial. And this is from, and we'll attach it to the podcast notes, but this is what they say directly and then attach the protocol for you. But it says the phase 3 clinical trial was designed to determine if the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine is safe and effective in preventing COVID-19 disease, period. Okay. What have all of our public officials, Stuart, come on record saying it doesn't do?
Yeah, it prevents you from getting sick and and it prevents you from giving it to others. Is that what you're alluding to?
Yes. That's what it's supposedly supposed to be doing. But what has our public officials said it doesn't do?
Well, our public officials now say it doesn't do either.
Okay. So given that, I would think that it's interesting that the point of the trial, as well as what they proved, is now openly the exact opposite of what is said by them in public. Now, initially, they did say it prevented COVID-19. They were wrong, but I'm pretty sure even now, everybody, you can't believe your lying eyes, because at the time now, everyone is realizing that it doesn't work. Everyone's gotten more than one jab, more than two jabs. A lot of people are up to 5 to 6 jabs and are still getting COVID. So again, it is safe and effective in preventing COVID-19 disease is exactly what the trial was designed to do. And it's what they said it did. And so when you hear officials say, well, we always kind of knew it didn't do this, and also say, well, the original reason for the vaccine was to prevent hospitalization and death, they are being, at worst, actively trying to lie. At best, they are trying to be they're basically misinforming.
Yeah, and that's illegal in California. I wonder if they're able to travel there now. The interesting thing about this, several months ago, I sent the data to one of the head experts of this in our state of Alabama, and he immediately sent an email back to me saying, yeah, but it's saving lives and keeping people out of the hospitals, which, you know, I didn't send him back the hard data that I've been sending him, the data that shows that that's not true, but he just dismissed.
You wouldn't be allowed. I mean, it'd be one thing.
He just said it didn't matter.
To say that, but we all know that from an FDA perspective, you can have off-label uses, and I guess he's right. Alluding to an off-label use of this vaccine.
Well, correct? Great point. Yeah, absolutely.
Because the on-label use is preventing. If he's actually giving it people to keep them out of the hospital, he needs to inform them that he is using the vaccine off-label.
All right. Treating. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, that to me is pretty obvious. I mean, as a physician, I don't have a problem with people using things off label. In fact, that's probably half of what medicine is. But when we talk about using things off label, you usually need to inform the patient what you're trying to do. and make sure that they understand that this is not what this vaccine in the trial proved. Now, I'm not somebody that thinks randomized controlled trials are 100% necessary for all what I would call therapeutic interventions, but damn well pretty sure should be for a vaccine given to healthy people.
Yeah, that's experimental. Even to babies, infants, and breastfeeding mothers and pregnant women. It's unconscionable. Once again, what we would encourage people to do is take the questionnaire on our website, questions for you to ask your primary care doctor or OBGYN or whoever, friend that's a physician, a provider, and just pray about the list and give it to them. You can find it on concerneddoctors.org, and then let them chew on it a little bit, because their answers will be inconsistent with the reality. And I realize that's an antagonistic statement, but it kind of is meant to be, because they are so blind to the self-evident truth that these vaccines are very dangerous and causing way more harm than benefit. In fact, I don't know if you saw it this past week, where Steve Kirsch was posting the link. There's this guy, I forget what New England city he's in, epidemiologist who has been tasked with refuting Steve Kirsch's data. And lo and behold, he didn't mean to, but he validated Steve Kirsch's data. And it's obvious. That's the sad reality, is anybody that has any patient contact with these injured patients, there is no denying that they have problems that you were culpable in their experience, because they are injured based on the spike protein's mechanisms of action. And you cannot deny it any longer. And so our encouragement is for those that are not providers, number one, get them to listen to our podcast. And we invite dialogue. Please send us email, send us your questions to America Out Loud Pulse. But also take that list from our webpage, concerneddoctors.org, and pray about it. Give it to the doctor and let them mull over it so they can maybe reach out to us. We'll be glad to dialogue with them. Unfortunately, they never invite us to dialogue with them, but we certainly invite them to dialogue with us.
Yeah, that to me is the big issue. It just is completely, I guess, you know, we go back to that, the word that I think was co-opted by Fauci in our administrative state was to take a word that is historically associated with something safe and usually well-designed and planned, and taking that word, and the word is vaccine, and using it to really trick the medical profession. I think, you know, one explanation I have for the lack of knowledge about this is because I think a lot of people, once they hear that word, don't think that there can be damage. And I think the problem is that in this case, a vaccine was a misapplication of that term, a term that had for years had pretty good, not a perfect track record, but it definitely had it wasn't having people drop dead, you know, within 48 hours of the vaccine type or the injection. But that's what they did. And I think they did it effectively. And that's what we have to realize, that this is happening in every domain. And I think it's definitions matter, because definitions come with them thought processes and understandings. And I mean, I would say historically, to think a vaccine would do this to most physicians is something they would have never even imagined.
Yeah. I remember in medical school, we were 25, 30 years ago, they were saying that the average age of life in America in 1900 was 47. The average age of length of life in 2000 was 77. That 30-year increase in 100 years is really just amazingly powerful. It's just amazing. 30 years of increased average life within a 100-year time span. And they always said the number one reason for that was vaccines. And in the last year or two, in reading about things, that's not true. The number one reason was hygiene, was toilets and running water, and the result of having your homes heated and cooled, and the benefits that that allowed for. But the vaccines, I tell you, those three in 2019. Two Israeli scientists who remained anonymous wrote a very important book called Turtles All the Way Down. And in it, it goes to what Robert Kennedy Jr. said in his book a year ago, The Real Anthony Fauci, that these vaccines have not been as safe as they have touted them to be, and they have not been studied. And then I'm talking about the traditional vaccines. But then on top of that, you add the money-making guarantee that is given to these companies and individuals in the 1980s with the law that allowed them to have immunity. And lo and behold, now you have this creation of these poisonous jabs that now people are required to do and even encouraged in young children who have virtually zero risk of dying from the virus. The whole thing is corrupted to the core, and we would encourage you to go watch the video, the movie that came out a week or two ago on The Real Anthony Fauci. And it's very interesting that the evidence has been there, and we've not been allowed to see it.
Yeah, that's the big issue, is that I think seeing how the sausage was made and seeing the lies that we've been told makes you rethink and look back at things that you assumed. And I think our public health establishment is starting to realize that, well, I don't know if they're realizing it yet, but they wonder why people are not getting vaccinated now. It's because when you're dishonest with the public and the public has an obvious view of malfeasance, you're not going to get trust by pushing more crap. In fact, what you're going to do is see people head the other direction and say, well, everything you said, is it trustworthy? Doesn't mean it's, again, I'm not saying everything they've said is lies, but when you are pushing lies now, what you've said in the past is under review.
Yeah, and they're doing generational damage for not acknowledging the obvious facts and the realities of the injuries from these stupid vaccines. They are... It's just sinister. And until they acknowledge that they have been hoodwinked, and I believe the vast majority of them have been lied to and bought into lies, I do not think the vast majority of physicians, providers out there have been complicit in poisoning humanity in America. But I've made this statement recently, and I think it will really sadly come to fruition. And that is in history, as history looks back hundreds of years from now, I think America will be judged for what we did in creating the virus and in the vaccine. Because as Dr. Paul Alexander said a couple of months ago, the vaccine, not only is the virus a bioweapon, but the vaccine is too. And I think it certainly qualifies. America will be judged for this, not just what we did to our own country, but what we did to humanity at large.
Yeah, I think there is... It's just sinister at its core in many ways. That is worrisome for our future. I do think we need to have a revolution in a sense that we start to realize that some of these public health measures need to be reevaluated. And I think that's what Steve Kirsch or Del Bigtree are advocating, just to say, hey, just because you think something's perfect doesn't mean it doesn't need to be looked at scrupulously again as we learn more information. I think that's where a lot of these measures, like the mask, for instance, or all those different things, is looking at it again through a lens that is unbiased. And of course, everybody carries their bias with them, but it needs to be done. And I think until that's done, a lot of these public health measures that we've just blindly assumed are perfectly fine are going to be, I'd say for the public, they're under review right now.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, Jordan, we'll discuss in the next segment, if you will, some of the wonderful facts that came out of the conference that you were one of the speakers for 2 weeks ago. And the fact is, I think this week, anybody can access those if they're willing to pay for it. But it would be every provider in the country. It's the most important medical conference I've ever been to. And I think every provider, if their patients, if they're unwilling to pay for it, hopefully they can get some patients of the doctors can get together and pay for it or whatever. But it is a very important conference that I hope more of them will listen to, because it was based on raw data, raw science, empiric evidence, something that has been missing from dialogue in the last 2 years.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Whoa, wait. We wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
So after 2 weeks of reflection upon a conference that both Stuart and I attended, one thing I think is always good when we have a conference like that is to go back and kind of look through your notes and see what stuck out to you and what you thought was some of the most important findings that you gathered from other people that are currently going through a similar analysis of how to help people, especially with this, as we've said in the previous segments, this what we would call spike protein induced diseases or injuries. So Stuart, give me a little kind of rundown on a couple of things that you thought were just useful for the general population to understand.
Yeah, once again, anybody that is a provider needs to go and download and watch these. I think it started wonderfully with Dr. Ryan Cole, the pathologist who sees 10,000, I think it's 10,000
specimens
a year. I mean, just a very busy guy. And he started out with some wonderful evidence, sad evidence, but very important evidence that's being ignored. Then Steve Kirsch, the billionaire philanthropist, spoke. And I thought he was more of a stats guy that was looking at the reality of not just the scientific evidence, but the statistical evidence of things. And I thought his statement that the vaccine injuries is kind of a double peak. the initial one within the first week or so, but then the second peak of injuries from the vaccine occurs at 5 months, and it continues to climb, obviously, with accumulation of data or injuries. I can understand why in looking at that graph. I thought that was very interesting that I'd seen that. I had heard Dr. Diane Counts give us a wonderful breakdown back in January, I think it was, our group of concerned doctors 1 week. And she gave a great lecture to us. And one of the stats she said was the average stroke occurs 150 days after the vaccine. And that was the first time I'd heard that. And I hadn't seen a lot of data corroborating that. And then he gave wonderful evidence of, or unfortunately, it's not wonderful, but it's the evidence that that does occur around 5 months again. So I thought that was very important for people to appreciate. You think you're out of the woods after you get past the first couple of weeks, but really you need to be more vigilant about getting rid of the spike protein in your body through things like that JP talked about and that Dr. Bean talked about. And the hyperbaric oxygen that Dr. Harsh spoke about, just wonderful things that you can do, not just for spike injury, but for overall inflammation in your body. And, of course, diet and exercise, all these wonderful things that we can do to help our bodies, not just with the spike, but with the inflammation that the spike causes and other autoimmune type conditions, mitochondrial injury. You got to do things to help your body, the energy stores in the cells to recover and be more robust. I thought that was a very interesting part of things. Dr. Berkovitz was an interesting guy. I got to talk to a couple of times for a while. He and Dr. Merrick and Dr. Corey were kind of the three big guys to get this thing off the ground. And Dr. Berkovitz talked a lot about the low-dose naltrexone anti-inflammatory properties, and I thought that was very helpful and people would find very useful in treating patients. One of the interesting things I remember was that the average post-vaccine injury patient has 23 symptoms. That's the average. It is really debilitating. And
it's multi-systems.
It's multi-system. And Dr. Flavio from Brazil said it's more of a syndrome than it is a disease. And I agree with him on that. Maybe that was JP that said that. But those are just some big picture items that I think everybody needs to start appreciating because, once again, a lot of people, millions of people, not our data, VAERS data. Millions of people are being injured, have been injured by these vaccines. As a matter of fact, last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, Steve Kirsch had an article that shows that based on their data and the underreporting, probably 55 million Americans have been injured by these vaccines.
So what I'm going to do real quick is this is a lady. She's a kind of a specialist cardiologist that I've spent time talking to over Zoom and email named Ray Duncan, but they gave a presentation on kind of from a cardiologist perspective, which I thought was fantastic. So I'm going to play this right now, Stuart. It's Ray Duncan, and I will include this in our podcast notes as well.
COVID, and we know this now, and David Fitz no doubt will talk to you about this in a lot more detail, but long COVID is predominantly a vascular disease, not a respiratory illness, and it is predominantly a disease of the microvasculature as well. So what we're seeing with long COVID is we're seeing it enters through the respiratory tract, but then in the blood vessels, you're getting this chronically stimulated immune response. You're getting maladaptive innate immune response. You're getting a chronically stimulated T lymphocytes that are chucking out lots of cytokines in response to the viral antigen, the spike protein. And they are becoming chronically stimulated and you're getting immune exhaustion. So therefore, you're probably at increased risk of further infections because you're becoming immunocompromised with reduced T cell, productive T cell activity. But in addition to that, these pro-inflammatory cytokines are inflaming the inner linings of the blood vessels called the endothelium. That then triggers another response where you get platelet activation, which are the molecules involved in blood clotting, and it triggers the coagulation cascade, and you end up with this cytokine and clot soup. Now, in long COVID, these clots are very small. They're amyloid microclots. And the other thing that's important to mention is they're not normal clots. In the presence of spike 4 protein, fibrin, which is the molecule that's involved in the clotting, becomes misfolded, and it becomes misfolded into an amyloid formation. And when it does that, it also traps other molecules inside it. So you end up with these fibrin amyloid microclots that are resistant to fibrinolysis, which means the body is struggling to break them down. And if you make too many of these clots, what we believe is happening is these clots are getting sequestered or stuck, we think, in the capillary vascular beds. And when you have enough of these, it is obstructing the flow of oxygen to every single organ in your body. And that is what is causing the symptoms of long COVID. But in addition to that, we think the clots themselves are immunogenic. And so you get inflammation at the site in the capillaries. The capillaries are not as well protected as the larger blood vessels because they don't have a tunica adventitia or basement or a tunica media.
So I thought her presentation on that was pretty well spoken, because I a lot of times have trouble getting all that out in a way that I think is fairly understandable to the common person. And I think she did a good job of that. But that is the spike proteins, kind of a cascade of everything it's doing and the consequences. She probably would take me 10 minutes to describe what she described in 2 minutes in a very effective way. So I'm very thankful for Ray in that capacity. But what she described is what I think the importance of the conference was to me, which was that I would call myself on team clots, team microclots, but team microclots or team clots can't ignore team immune system or team overactivation of immune system, which I think Merrick and Corey and a lot of other doctors are in that camp. Now, I think both of our camps are overlapping very quickly, but it is that they are, it's because they're looking at one thing, we're looking at another, and guess what? They both actually rev each other up. And I think that was probably the most important thing to me from the conference, is that you have to, especially I think in the vaccinated population, that these people's immune system is revved up, or viral, or what I would call spike protein replication is still happening, or there's persistence of it. The body's not clearing it effectively. Because of that, the downstream stuff is still happening. So to me, that was the best part of the conference, was, you know, to have what I understood to be backed up with, oh yeah, we agree, but Jordan, you have to also address the fact that it's still being produced unless you address what we're, proposing.
Yeah, the injuries that are caused by these spike proteins is undeniable, and until doctors wake up and accept the responsibility that they have had the last 3 years to fight the pathology, to go and understand and dig in and grapple with what the reality of this virus and vaccines are doing to people, it's just going to be a very long process. But long term, more important than that, is the complete distrust that they are promoting for generations to come of our profession, because we have failed. And as a result of that, we can't get the point across enough. We've got to get the doctors engaged in the fight. We've got to get them to start looking at what is going on in the pathophysiology, because heretofore, it seems like the vast majority have refused to do that. We're being more antagonistic or more direct in our statements like that, because, daggum, the evidence is more and more abundant that they have been wrong, and wrong again, and they just keep moving the goalposts and nobody holds them to account for it. And there's a reason, obviously, for that to happen. that we won't go into today, but but it's not good. It's evil. People just need to repent and allow themselves to see the truth that's right before their very eyes, and look for the data, dig into the science, and help us. Please help us help the patients, because there are millions, literally millions of injuries. And what she was alluding to with these amyloid clots, I think I meant to say this at the beginning of what I just said. We had Dr. embalmer Kirschman from South Alabama, who's made international news in the last year. When he and other embalmers started noticing in April, May of 21, not of 20, but of 21. So the difference between 20 and 21 was the fact that the vaccines were available in 21, these long elastic, kind of like calamari type of clots that are found throughout the body. And I think he said one of them was almost 6 feet long. These are due to what the spike protein, what she was just describing, is happening in the body. And so until we accept this catastrophe for what it is, we're not going to engage in the fight against what's going on as physicians.
Agreed. I will say one other paper that just actually came out this morning is pretty, it looks at just the reinfection risk based on prior infection. And it looks pretty promising. It seems like it does a pretty, it says effectiveness of prior pre-Omicron infection followed by an Omicron infection was 91.6%. So if you've had Omicron and you had something previous to Omicron, I would avoid anything that has any something that they call a vaccine on it. So
yeah, and that's maybe, might have been even a year ago, but several months ago, I think it was up to 200 papers have proven that our bodies, the natural immunity that the good Lord gave us, is superior to that even their data showed of the vaccines. So if you've had it, and as of this summer, 86%, I think 86% of children, people under 18 or 19, had already had exposure. So why in the world would we want to be experimenting on them or pregnant women? And it's just a catastrophe that continues to play itself out. Thank goodness the large majority of people, with less than 5% of people taking these new vaccines, the bivalent vaccines that came out 2 months ago, people have decided they're on our side on this. They're not going to do this to themselves anymore, because they promised us, you know, at the beginning, very, very effective, completely effective, some people said, and completely safe. People know that's not true, and they're not going to buy into any more of these.
Yep. And again, I mean, I think they rightfully understood that they've been duped, because even as we said in the first segment, the landmark study looked for prevention. And prevention is a word that most people understand. And when you change the outcome halfway through the game, or change the rules, a lot of people start to, you know, have big question marks.
By the way, just an update on where we are in the country with the Omicron, I think it's BA5, that was expected a month ago. It looked like it would be headed our way, that would arrive on our shores in a big wave back 2 weeks ago, and then it would be continuing to today. One hospital in town last week had one COVID patient, inpatient, one.
Yeah, and I can tell you the very, very few COVIDs I'm seeing, mainly flu and RSV. So
yeah, and that's,
I guess things are getting back to normal.
Yeah, things are getting back to normal, or even worse than normal, because as you know, the evidence is showing that these inoculations, vaccines, increase your risk of getting other types of viral infections and other types of infections, whether it's fungal or bacterial. But the reality is that people are not. And remember, too, all of that on top of the fact that 2 or 3 weeks ago, our illustrious president declared another state of emergency to perpetuate the lies. And so with that, we have another supposedly spike in infections from COVID or SARS-2, and we have one hospitalization in one of the hospitals in Montgomery. And so it's very interesting.
The public health emergency needs to be to what public health did to our society with this vaccine. That needs to be the new public health emergency.
Yeah,
but and I don't believe in public health emergencies in that way.
Yeah, and we never should again. Actually, I'd like to, for us next week, if you want, if you would like to, Jordan, let's try and get in touch with, I think his name is Jeffrey Turner out of Brownstone Institute. Tucker. Who wrote an article about the impacts, the economic impacts. He wrote it for Hillsdale College's Imprentice, or so, I think.
Yeah, I read that last.
Yeah, and there was $6 trillion that the Fed created out of whole cloth at the beginning, over the last 2.5 years through these emergencies. And, of course, now we're seeing the inflationary pressures as a result of that. But I hope I can we can reach out and interview him. But there was a very interesting paper that he wrote.
So with that, we will see you next week. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tinkersley with America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.